That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, who competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky present a power word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint in gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works.
Well, hi everybody. It's Friday, noon. You're listening to WLXU 93.9 LPFM Lexington Community Radio. I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And you're listening to Bluegrass Bios.
And I have a migraine.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ben.
So I'm going to, my volume's a little louder than it usually is. Sorry. It's because my voice is lower.
Well, I will be happy to speak in a smooth baritone to appease your aching brain.
I can't help it.
Yeah.
So we'll match.
Yeah. You know, that's what partners do. We do what we can.
Yeah, and having the glasses on doesn't. I may need to switch to sunglasses here in a moment. But, yeah, we were talking before we came into the booth that neither one of us can do contacts.
Mm, that's true.
Because puffy eyelids? Small eyelids? Big eyelids?
I've got the small eyelid game going.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very squinty.
And so me and contacts, we just don't.
You know,
the guy that
invented contacts is a friend of mine's relative in Cincinnati, I believe.
Oh,
and
wow!
I think he was a glassblower and invented it because his wife couldn't see.
Interesting.
So he hooked it up.
So he got the glassblower going.
Mm-hmm.
He made a very, very, very tiny glassblower and made her little contacts.
Exactly.
See, I can't get the soft contacts into my eyes because they're too big.
Mm.
And then the hard contacts I put in, and they just drown out.
Mm.
My eyes say, no, you're not supposed to put anything on me.
Were you trying
to put in
like those all-white contacts so it looks like you don't have eyeballs? Just
no, but I'd like to do that sometime now that you mention it. I hate it when actors do that.
Mm.
That's not really acting.
You know, last night I was...
Because Jamie Foxx did that in Ray, and I said, no, that's not acting.
Last night I comically went through a Limp Bizkit video rabbit hole, and I noticed the bassist for Limp Bizkit. He wears those all the time. Anyway, speaking of making contact, our guest here...
Oh, that was Kyle Worthy.
Thank you.
Speaking of
Limp Bizkit fans, John Ferguson in the studio. What's up, John?
How's it going?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well.
Excellent.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Let me mention, Kyle's off this week. Kyle will be back next week for all of his rabid Bigelow fans.
Rabid Bigelow fans.
We call them Bigelows.
They want the puns.
Bungalows.
We'll do what we can.
Bungalows, we'll call those.
So with us in the studio is John Ferguson. John, you have a variety of skills and experience in making music, running shows, doing a variety of things. First question.
Sure.
Where are you from? Where are you from, John?
I am from Owensboro, Kentucky, which is the third largest city in Kentucky.
Mm.
City, I use that term liberally because it still feels like a town.
Mm.
About how many people do you think?
60,000.
Okay.
That number has not changed in 30 years. It's not growing.
Oh, wow.
It's certainly not a growing town.
Mm.
So you think people are kind of taking, when they get new people, they kind of leave for Lexington or Louisville, and then new people kind of come in, so there's a nice...
There's a brain drain from that town.
So there's a core group of maybe, what would you say, 30? 30 people. 30,000 people.
Yeah.
And then maybe the rest just kind of weave around and figure eight around Kentucky.
definitely. It's a
thank you for backing me up on
it's a small town that I grew up in, and it's surrounded by fast food and church, and that's it. Like, those are your two options. You can go to get McDonald's breakfast on your way to church, and then after church you go to the Long John Silver's for a fish
some hush puppies,
and then you go back to church that night, and then you might go to the Dairy Queen after for some blizzards.
But you had the Dairy Queen, not the Tasty Freeze. You had
That's
the
correct.
Real Dairy
We had the
Queen.
Real Dairy Queen.
It's there it's you go. The, it's well, that makes you a larger city. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, when we were kids, at some point in the 80s, Owensboro was like the third most populated city in America with regard to fast food restaurants.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So the most number of fast food restaurants per person.
Capita. Yeah.
And that was like a badge of honor. Mm. That was something that Owensboroans were very proud of.
Mm.
And so McDonald's, for example, tested their McPizza on us.
Wow.
We got the McPizza.
When was that?
I take it didn't go very well.
It didn't test very well.
Yeah.
When did the McPizza, when was that around?
It's probably the late 80s, I guess. 80s. But we were so excited about the McPizza.
Well, John, can I ask you about music in Owensboro? You know, growing up there, how did you get interested in music, and what kind of music scene is going on in Owensboro? Is it all bluegrass? Or?
It's hard for me to speak on that now because I've been removed from Owensboro since the mid-90s. But
when did you move to Lexington?
96, I came up here to the UK.
Cool.
And for me, this was the big city, and I'd never seen like a town that had an active music scene that encouraged a garage band to play at a club, and I'd already formed a band, and we all went to school together, and Ross kind of championed my little band at the time and put on shows for us, and for me that was like everything. That was the reason that I wanted to stay in Lexington.
Shout out to Ross.
Thanks, Ross. Love you, guy. But back in Owensboro, I was it was a wasteland.
Yeah.
It was a complete wasteland. And I was very lucky. My dad's a musician and kind of a weirdo as well. And his best friend is a weirdo named R. Stevie Moore, who's kind of considered one of the grandfathers of the underground DIY
for sure.
home recording aesthetic. So I kind of grew up around that environment, and R. Stevie would send me cassettes in the mail. So I had, and he was a DJ at FMU during that time. So as a kid, I was very lucky to have like this direct line to hipster world and being exposed to really weird music that wasn't available to me in Owensboro. But in my basement, I had my own little like paradise of home recording weirdness.
So I'm thinking you got here in 96, so you just missed the Rockledge, or were you around? Oh, because that's where the everybody's friend's band played,
right?
From like the late 80s through when they closed, 95.
Yeah,
right before I turned 21, they closed.
Ah.
So yeah, we used to go. They had the all ages show every Sunday, and we used to go to that a lot. So what venues were there when you first got here that you liked to, where you liked to play?
Well, basically we were playing at Yat's because it was a restaurant.
Okay.
I don't think we were 21 yet, so.
And that was Ross.
Ross was putting on shows.
Which is now Gumbo Yaya, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was over in South Hill Station.
Mm-hmm.
So we would play shows at Yat's, and around that time I started to pick up opening slots for like the Blueberries, and
loved the Blueberries.
Some of the bigger bands in town would let us open for them at the old Lina's.
Do you remember where the first show you played in Lexington was, John?
I'm pretty sure it was at Yat's.
Was it Yat's?
Yeah. I don't remember too much about the details of that show or who we played with or anything like that.
What band was that you played?
It would have been Big Fresh.
Big Fresh.
Yes.
And can you explain a little bit to people about the history of Big Fresh?
Sure.
What is Big Fresh?
Big Fresh is a band that I still have, and I can't imagine a time in my life when I won't have it.
Mm.
We're married to each other at this point. It's like a marriage.
Imprinted, I think, is what.
Yes. We all went to school together. There's a core of us. There are like now 10 to 12 people in the band.
Wow.
It's kind of a collective, if you will. But there's a core of us, about four of us, who are from Owensboro and all grew up around the same time and went to UK and just kind of stayed together as a package deal.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I saw you guys was at the Ice House when I moved here in 2004. And I think it was just you and Jeremy Midkiff.
Okay.
I think that was it. But I just remember having an experience of, because that was also my first time kind of going to discover Lexington's kind of independent underground music scene. Yeah, I was blown away by, like, who are these guys? These guys live here? Like, oh my God. And my friend Amir Aklagi talked about you guys a lot, and I know he was friends with with y'all, and you know,
love that guy.
So that was really the reason I went to the show, and Big Fresh, blown away. And now to see the band kind of take on so many other members and really stretch its legs out, it's pretty good.
Got
pretty
a horn cool. section now and flautist, and we just keep expanding. The more the merrier, I always say.
Nice. So Big Fresh has a Christmas show coming up.
Next Friday, we do at Willie's. It'll be our first time playing at Willie's. We played at the old Willie's when it was on Broadway.
And this is Willie's, locally known over on Southland, right? Just under the bridge.
Yep.
Or the left of the bridge.
Yep.
Or the right of the bridge.
Yeah.
It's a family show. I always like encouraging people to come to early shows because those never happen, and then also the fact that it's a family restaurant, and so it's an all ages show, and it's at 8 p.m., which never happens. I hope to be in bed by 9:30.
Nice. So bring your grandma.
Exactly.
Bring your infant child. We'll have all ages.
Or if you need to get away from your grandma.
Yeah.
Or your infant child.
Tell her you're going to step out for a second.
Leave your infant child with your grandma and get out of there.
Yeah. So with Big Fresh Christmas, what can people expect? Without giving too much.
We've worked up a couple of Christmas songs just in the spirit of the season. And then we're also going to do what we do, which is mostly original music.
Cool. What genre would you say you guys are?
In the most generic sense.
Yeah, in the most generic.
We're a pop band.
Cool.
And I feel like that's a separate word from rock.
Right.
Because when people say, we're a rock band, I kind of expect my face to get blown off in some way. But we don't do that. We're more about, like, melodies and arrangements and little pop ditties.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's great. Well, how about let's listen to some Big Fresh. Is that okay?
Oh, you want to do Big Fresh first?
Yeah. It's on the computer, right?
It is. Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this song? Maybe
sure.
The album Money Chasers?
Big Fresh, we've been around since a long time ago, almost 20 years, and have made mostly albums ourselves, home recording. We used to use 4-tracks, and then we moved to computers, and that's still largely the way we do it. We keep it kind of expanding the scope of the recordings with more overdubs and more thought into our arrangement and stuff. But this is our last album that we put out a few years ago called Money Chasers. And we've got a new album in the works that should be coming out early 2017 on my new label, which I will talk about after.
Sure. Oh, there you go.
Awesome. Well, just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on WLXU 93.9. We're in the studio with John Ferguson talking Big Fresh. We'll be right back.
Once we were sleeping and then we awoke, and I'm not afraid. I like the challenges life starts to fade. Let's use our brains. They to evolve them so we could be sane. I think I'm bound for the same routines that we lost our
You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio. We're in the studio. By we, I mean Chuck and... I mean myself, Chuck, and Ben, and the Bingineer.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, guys. And we're here with John Ferguson.
Howdy, howdy.
Of Big Fresh, Apples and Stereo, variety of different disparate sounds, a few different things, and we're talking... We just heard from...
Is it disparate or desperate?
Sorry, disparate.
Yes, right? I think disparate.
Did I say desperate?
Well, that's
well, people kind of confuse
name of the label
things,
too.
It's
so.
Desperate sounds. I see.
Desperate spirits.
Desperate spirits.
Right.
It is.
And we were talking off mic. I think if I was to compare it to anybody, to just kind of give them a base knowledge of what you guys are, it sounded a little like Spoon, which
sure.
is one of my very favorite bands. So I
love Spoon.
I really dug that a lot.
Thank you.
That's great. So,
yeah.
So John, yeah, we just heard that Big Fresh track. That was great.
Thank you.
So amongst all of the bands that you're in and the music that you make and is that right? Is that the plural of series?
Sure. CRI.
That you put together. What's your day job? What do you do?
For money, I'm a theater guy, and I work at Transylvania University, where I'm the technical director and run their theater spaces.
That's great.
So
before that... I know you've worked in a few different spots in town running sound.
Yep. I used to work at Rupp Arena and the Opera House, and I was the technical coordinator at the Opera House for about 14 years.
Nice.
Oh, wow. So just recently, this past year, I moved over to Transy, to the more academic side of theater.
Mm.
Just up the road?
Just up the road.
Cool.
Yeah. Transy brings some pretty interesting shows.
They do.
Shows into town, mostly on the classical side.
Yeah.
But do you have any shows in particular that you ran sound for that were notable, or some shows that
certainly
you were surprised by? Can you tell us a little bit about some?
Just as a sound engineer, the jazz series that UK used to put on, that Chester Grundy put on for, I guess, 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It came to the Opera House for, I'm not sure, a few years at least, and so I was able to run front of house sound for... like the Dave Holland Quintet, mm-hmm. the Count Basie Orchestra. And then later I ran sound for B.B. King, basically the year he passed.
Wow.
So many shows just blur together. I mean, you do shows for a living, then they become less like events and more like showing up for work.
Yeah, for
sure. But certainly a lot of the artists, I didn't run sound, but I was there for Brian Wilson, Randy mm-hmm. Newman. There are some highlights, you know, Elton John and Billy Joel came to Rupp Arena. That was cool.
Wow.
What's your most difficult job as a sound designer for a live show or a theater show?
Oh, gosh. There's so many.
Well, what's the little thing that just kind of put... Let's say there's a DIY person out there who wants to put on a show. What's like some advice
sure.
you could pass on? Watch out for this.
If people are mindful of the details, especially with regard to sound... So many people don't even think about sound as an aspect of the show because they're concentrating on the visuals and the plot and the blocking and the sets and the design and the costumes.
And the leather pants.
And so as a sound guy over the years, you get the feeling that sound is just something that somebody else is going to worry about over there.
Right.
And so it's always a last-minute detail that people panic about. Like, oh, gosh, you get to dress rehearsal, and the director realizes they can't hear any of the lines in the play.
Right.
And then they panic and say, okay, how can we fix this? And then you say, well, you need to rent this $10,000 mic package so that every actor has their own individual microphone.
Mm-hmm. So maybe if you're the sound guy and you're working on play, dance troupe, something where sound is not at the forefront of the creative person's mind,
right.
maybe get to them early
exactly.
and say, we may need to rent some equipment, so
exactly.
let's take 5 to 10 minutes to check this out at the end.
And that was,
and then just kind of keep after them.
Yeah, that was part of my job at the Opera House as the technical coordinator, and it's still part of my job as technical director at Transy, is you kind of help clients along with giving them those kinds of ideas. Like, here, you may not have thought about this,
yeah.
but you actually need to have ushers in your lobby, and you need to sell tickets, probably. It's probably a good idea to have tickets.
yeah.
So it's more than just sound.
Oh, no, it's like the whole, like the big picture.
The concert package.
People often get lost in one aspect of putting on a show,
mm-hmm.
and forget that there's a whole lot to it.
Yeah, I guess that makes me wonder, kind of, because the Lexington Opera House has been around forever, longer than we've been around, collectively. Yeah, yeah.
I went there as a small child.
Yeah, and so what are some unique aspects to the Opera House when you're trying to deal with sound in a place that existed far before any type of technology that's probably being used in this show?
Well, it's an old vaudeville theater. I think it was built in 1886. And so, surprisingly, the acoustics in there are wonderful because of this. The very back seat in the house is only about 75 feet away from the stage. Wow. And so if you are a trained actor or a performer and actually project, then in theory, there shouldn't be a problem with the audience hearing you. But what we've gotten used to over the years is people get used to microphones and having kind of the reinforcement of technology. So people project less and less.
So maybe the Opera House was built at a time when you had to really consider
The
sound and how far away the back of, you know, the third level row ZZZ is to the stage and design your theater, your stage, and the contours of your space in order for that. And then technology comes along and, well, do you really need it, or is that better for you, or is a more poorly designed theater better for a sound guy and a mic guy?
It's certainly more of a challenge to have a bad situation, but the Opera House was not that situation. Okay. The Opera House was a great sounding room, and so all you had to do with the technology was just sweeten it. You're just there to help it out a little bit.
Just wax the
massage
exterior.
It along. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Get a little turn of wax out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so when you had, like, world-class performers on stage, like a Dave Holland Quintet, or, you know, people that have played in every hall in the world, literally, they knew how to work a room. They knew what kind of dynamics they needed to bring on stage to make a room sound good.
Cool.
And so that was always exciting for me as a sound guy, is when you could work with performers who had kind of mastered that type of performance and appreciation of working a room and filling a space. I think a lot of people are just scared to be on stage, and so they don't put out what they should as a performer.
Yeah.
You know,
getting through that.
It's scary. I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Even though I do it. I still don't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sound acoustics, you also just started a label.
Yes.
And produced a new album by the band Attempt here in town, correct?
I can't say I produced the album. Oh. Trevor Tremaine is the creator, and he is Attempt. Mm. I happen to be in his band when there's a live version of the band, I'm in that project.
So can you tell us a little bit about the upcoming album?
Sure. It's called Personal Fables, and he recorded it himself in his garage. I helped him a little bit with, like, the mixing process and had the album mastered.
I see. So you helped master it.
Yeah, but it's great. As far as a home recording goes, it's, like, super accomplished. And I'm proud to be part of anything he does.
Yeah, Trevor's unbelievable.
Yeah. And this has come up several times on the show, which is you don't need a recording studio anymore, really. And you don't need the giant mixing board, and you don't need access to, you know, the great audio editing, because you get it for free now. And not just stealing it, but there's actually free software, out there. And you can record it, you can make tracks, you can master it, and you can distribute it now. Is this available or going to be available on all your regular digital platforms for sale?
This label that Trevor and I started, a record label.
What's it called?
It's called Desperate Spirits. And not disparate.
Yeah.
Desperate Spirits. And it is specifically a label to launch our personal projects. Because we have so many people just in our little wheelhouse of friends within our own band who have their own amazing projects. We feel like we've got enough material to justify kind of a label that puts all of it out.
Yeah.
So we're not necessarily a label that's looking to sign bands or put out things that people submit to us. We feel like we've got enough stuff on our own in our own little world to put things out. So already In the next few months, we've got the Attempt records coming out. We've got an Italian Beaches record coming out. And we've got a Big Fresh record coming out. All coming out on vinyl.
Because
we're old school hipster snobs.
I love
like
records.
That.
I've said many times, I love records.
Yeah, I think
I just love feeling them. I love looking at the packaging. It's a good size.
Absolutely. Record Store Day is my Christmas, really.
Yes.
I love it.
I prefer the sound of vinyl. I think it really captures all the high and low ends in a better way than CDs or any type of digital format, which leads me to my next question. When you're mastering a CD or a record, or a track that you know is only going to be digitally released, kind of how do you approach that? What are the differences?
So we actually have a friend who's a mastering engineer in Athens, Georgia, Jason Nesmith, and he's a very talented musician and engineer. So I send everything to him, and he does all of his magic, which up until pretty recently I thought of mastering as literally just magic. Like I had no idea what they were doing. You'd send them kind of a crappy thing and they would come back polished and you're like, whoa, this sounds so much better. How did you do that? Now I'm starting to understand a little bit about what they do in the process, but certainly there's this idea of mastering for digital release and then versus mastering for vinyl. Most of the time when you're dealing with record plants, there's a mastering engineer there when they cut the official lathe of the record that all the other records are based on. Mm-hmm. There's typically an engineer involved who's mastering on the spot for vinyl. And what they have to factor in is that based on where the needle is on the record is changing how the sound is transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes your high-end will change, the EQ curve will change as you get closer to the center of the record.
So they have
to factor that in.
Oh, interesting.
And so there's certain little subtleties like that that most people don't even consider, but a mastering
just
engineer.
Sort of the geography of the vinyl as opposed to just a one or a zero.
Right.
I guess. Neat.
And evidently, if you have like a hard-hitting, low bass type frequency, you want that on the widest part of the record towards the beginning.
I guess the circumference of the spinning of the record, the speed in which, you would have to take into account for that. Never thought about that.
It affects how wide the grooves can be, where it is on that plate. And so, in theory, the wider the groove is, the more information you can cut into the record. Yeah. So there's a lot of little details that like record people get geeky about, you know, and like whether you're using 180 gram versus just the cheap plastic and how deep you can cut the record. And
we're very thankful for them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's doing the Lord's work.
I leave it up to those guys. They're all wizards, and I trust that, you know, when I get it back from them on the record, that it's going to sound pretty decent.
That's awesome. So you just put out a compilation with the label, right?
We did. So Desperate Spirits is... It was started by Trevor Tremaine and myself, but quickly we added Kim Smith, who is also in Big Fresh, and Frigid Kitty, and Bear Medicine, and Rob Theakston, who Trevor and I have been friends with for years, and the four of us have been just kind of building this label, trying to get all the nuts and bolts together of having a real business license, getting real publishing for our artists, which is just ourselves, real bank accounts, you know, trying to be adult about this whole thing. And so Rob had this idea a few weeks ago, just kind of in, I think it was post-election, but in light of recent events nationally.
Sure.
And kind of this horrible tide turning towards extreme right-wing, extreme racist ideology that's becoming more... I don't want to say that it was not there before. It's always been there. It's just becoming more...
It's emboldened.
Exactly. Great word.
There's a semantic legitimization of it.
Yeah, specifically the alt-right movement, kind of trying to put an intellectual spin on what's basically just racism.
Yeah, 100%.
We are... our compilation is called White Power is for Dummies, and it has a picture on the cover of Richard Spencer kind of dressed up as a clown looking ridiculous, and it's a compilation of all mostly local artists, a few people that have Moved away from Lexington, but it still have a Lexington connection. And so Rob put it together quickly, kind of in response to some recent events, and wanted to donate tracks, wanted local artists to donate their tracks, and then any proceeds we have from the sales of this compilation, which now have added up to a good bit, we're going to donate it all to the Anti-Defamation League.
Excellent.
Cool. Now, who is the Anti-Defamation League, if folks don't know?
They're a complicated group, but they specifically, I think they may, I might misspeak here, but they may have started to deal with racism pointed towards Judaism or people of Jewish descent, but that somehow blossomed into basically fighting any forms of neo-Nazi organizations, any kind of white power rhetoric.
They're racial discrimination, exactly. Racial hatred, and racial violence, yes. More than anything else.
So they're on the front lines of trying to legally combat those kinds of things worldwide.
That's great, and using art to fund their legal battles to fight bigotry and hatred.
Awesome.
It's what art's all about.
Well, we have the Attempt CD.
Great.
Queued up here. Perfect. This is track one. What's the name of this track?
This is called Personal Best, and it's going to be coming out on vinyl in about a month.
Okay.
But we'll also have download codes if you buy the vinyl to have the digital release. But this is a world premiere, if you will.
Oh, premiere. Fantastic. What was the name of the album again?
Personal Fables.
So it's Personal Best.
And this is Personal Fables. Personal Best off of Personal Fables.
Very good.
So just in case you're joining us, this is Bluegrass Bios. We're here with John Ferguson. And this is Attempt with Personal Best.
Thank you. one of Lexington's newest farm-to-table restaurants is located at the corner of Jefferson and West 6th Street. Smithtown Seafood's menu is both familiar and creative, emphasizing local foods and old-fashioned Kentucky recipes in dishes such as beer cheese with West 6th Quarter, wild-caught fried catfish, flavor-packed burgers, vegetarian and vegan specialties, salads and ethnic seafood dishes such as fish tacos and tilapia Singapore, and much more. Smithtown makes everything on the menu from scratch and whenever possible with local Kentucky-raised ingredients. Smithtown Seafood is in the Weta Michaels family of restaurants, which includes Holly Hill Inn and the Midway School Bakery in Midway, Wallace Station in Versailles, and Windy Corner here in Lexington. For more information, you can call Smithtown Seafood at 859-303-4100, or you can check them out online at smithtownseafood.com. Lexington Community Radio thanks Smithtown Seafood for supporting Community Radio.
It can be awkward to talk to your partner about STDs, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. Half of sexually active people under the age of 25 will get a sexually transmitted infection. Most of them won't even know it, because many STDs have no symptoms. Do you know your STD status? The only way to be sure is to get tested. If you're uncomfortable talking to your regular doctor about STDs, make an appointment with Planned Parenthood on their website at plannedparenthood.org. Don't have insurance? Free testing is available at the Lexington Health Department. Call them at 859-288-2483.
Do you need that perfect touch for your next event? Mariachi Azteca offers services for every kind of event. Anniversaries, birthdays, proms, parties, and more. You can make that moment special with Mariachi Azteca. Available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. For more information, you can call 859-382-7384.
Tune in to Urban Conversations
every Monday and Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. on 93.9 WLXU.
Come sit in the lounge with us. I'm your host, Janice.
And I'm your host, Future, where your voice matters.
Any questions?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on WLXU 93.9 FM, Lexington Community Radio. We're here in the studio with John Ferguson.
What's up?
What's up? So, John, that was a track off the world premiere off the Brand New Attempt album.
Yes.
Lexington music, Kentucky music, Trevor Tremaine, his solo project that has grown legs and grown into a full band.
Yes, and we are playing January 5th with Sonny Chiba at the New Cosmic Charlie's. Can you promote shows on here?
Of course. Please. That's what we
can't
do.
Say a price, though. That's the deal.
For ticket info, you can give us a call.
Gotcha.
You can't
tell people what to do.
Right.
But you can tell them what's out there.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's what we do. It's an education.
Sonny Chiba's, that's a great name.
Yeah.
Very, yeah.
Not the actor who started a band.
Right.
But this is a band named after the actor. Yeah,
exactly.
I love Sonny.
And the New Cosmic Charlie's. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, which reminds me, I wanted to talk about the cult film series.
Great.
A little bit before you take off.
Sure.
I love the cult film series. What do you guys have coming up?
So next year, we've got the entire calendar for next year booked. We decided to go with a theme of 80s and early 90s smut.
No. Oh, very good.
So
I just finished an 80s action movie binge recently.
Perfect.
Ending with Drive, the Ryan Gosling film, which kind of is a tribute to that. So
sure.
I was watching, you know, anything by William Friedkin or Michael Mann or
yes.
John Carpenter. I think those are the big guys.
You just named like three of my favorite.
Oh, yeah. And this is over at Al's?
We do it, yeah. We're changing it up to Tuesdays, the first Tuesday of every month. We will have a cult film. This is the eighth year now of this ongoing film series. And I've been at the helm for about the last 4 years. Took it over from Colleen Glenn, who moved out of town. Mm-hmm. So
cult films. How do you guys go about choosing what films you show?
Mostly, I'm such a fan of movies, and I've seen so many that I kind of have. I keep a running list, and then when people will recommend things to me, I keep a list of that, and then I make sure I watch them first. I don't just show things that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
We'll just roll the dice.
There is some quality control, and I think people think too that that the film series, because it's cult, that means it's going to be bad films. That's
for at least 4 years now, I've tried to make it good cult films.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know, have you had a theme before, an overarching theme for
I think this is our first year that we've like really gotten more detailed.
It was like 1 week would be what we were talking about off mic, the Ilya Kazan film, A Face in the Crowd, and then the next week would be Zardoz, and then the next week would be RoboCop. And
yes.
So what? Well, give us an example. What's the first movie we're starting? What's the smuttiest 80s movie we're starting off with?
Well, in February, we've got Showgirls, Paul Verhoeven's Showgirls. Well,
that's more 90s.
Yes,
I gotta take exception.
It is. There are
so
a couple 80s
90s. And 90s.
The other 90s would be The Color of Night with Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce's Willis is in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
So
there might be some parts you can fast forward.
Well, it's a bar, so I show some pretty questionable
just go get a drink or
stuff.
Yeah, you can eat some, you know, some food.
Next year certainly is going to be very rated R programming. So it's not a family friendly series.
No, don't bring the kids.
That's right.
So what's the next showing?
The next
film series.
Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me will be the first one. And I kind of wanted to piggyback on the fact that Twin Peaks is coming out with
I am so excited. I read the book. Have you seen the book?
I've seen it, but I have not read it.
It's very, very good. I don't know if it's canon, if that word comes up a lot.
Sure.
But it's sort of like if David Lynch was not involved in Twin Peaks and was just up to Mark Frost, this is what he would do.
Gotcha.
So there are little things here and there. It answers at least one question.
Okay.
So, and then the rest of the book is just way, way, way out there.
Nice.
It really goes more on the science fiction type aspect more than the David Lynch oddity kind of stuff. But I'm very excited that the show's coming back because it's unfinished.
That's right.
So it's not a sequel.
No.
It's not a reboot.
No.
They never finished the story.
Picking
because
up
they,
where they left off.
Yeah. Because they got canceled.
Right.
So, and that movie's fascinating.
Isn't that the history, though, of David Lynch? Kind of the Hollywood antagonist, if you will, constantly being canceled, and then 5 years later picking up on what he did and being like, oh, guess you guys like this now. You sat down and watched it.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, Mulholland Drive kind of being, well, the network didn't want it, so let's just turn it into a movie.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Add that on. What else you got?
We're doing
the
classic
'80s
Porky's.
Oh, yeah.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes.
Life Force. Toby Hooper's Life Force.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like naked vampires in space.
Yeah, right. The naked alien vampire chick. Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2, which is the
better,
the more homoerotic version of a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I think we've got a lot of campy goodies down the pipeline.
That's great.
Very, very cool.
Well, John, in addition to the cult film series, you're also the keyboard player in Apples and Stereo.
That's right. In an unrelated way.
Speaking of alien, wait, what did you say then? Something.
Alien vampire.
Naked
yeah, speaking alien of, vampire. Yeah, all naked alien vampires aside, you also play in Apples and Stereo.
Right? I do. I've been lucky enough to play with those guys for 10 years now. And
for folks that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about Apples?
Sure. They're a really amazing pop band. I think they started in Denver, Colorado back in the 90s and established themselves as a pretty big indie touring rock band. And then, thankfully to me and to Lexington, Robert Schneider, the lead singer and kind of brains behind the band, he moved to Lexington back in 2002. We met at a WRFL event soon after he moved here, and we hit it off and started playing music together. We formed our own band that was a side project to the Apples called Ulysses, and made a record and played some shows. And I'd always kind of been around Robert and the Apples, but I also had my day job at Rupp Arena, so it wasn't something I could just jump right into and be part of.
Yeah.
But at some point, I think in 2006... I was just like, you know what? I'm fed up with this 9-to-5 business. I want to join a group of merry pranksters and hit the road. So I went, joined the band and started touring and playing all over.
Yeah, you can always get a real job.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you have any funny tour stories? I know y'all were on like the Conan O'Brien show and did a few other things. Any funny stories from traveling around with them?
I mean, every day on tour, it's not something I want to like... brag about or sound boastful, but it's super fun to like go on tour and see the world with your friends.
Yeah.
Like it's a, and I'm very thankful. It's a luxury that I was able to do. I'm very thankful that I was part of it. But you know, you always hear like musicians talking about, oh, the road's so hard. It's so hard out there traveling and, yeah, you know, just driving and gas stations.
Another Waffle House breakfast.
Yeah. But I'm thinking like, you know, it's not really hard and it's actually kind of luxurious and like super fun to just be with your friends. And
when I hear musicians say that, I think you don't like your bandmates
right
very much.
That's right.
So it's like a job. If yeah you're, what is it? If you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life.
That's right.
Thing. So that tells me they don't really love hitting the road and going out
right
with their bandmates and probably don't like their bandmates or their bandmates' girlfriends and stuff like
that's
that.
That's exactly so right.
Yeah.
The Apples are a super fun group of people.
What's happening with the Apples right now?
So Robert, two, three years ago, moved down to Atlanta and Decatur specifically to get his PhD in mathematics at Emory University. And so the whole time we were on tour with the Apples, he had his nose buried in math books and would be writing formulas for fun. And I kid you not, like, he's just this uber nerd. Yeah, people think,
that
like, rock and roll
no,
is,
Robert's
like,
great
drinking
he's
all
amazing
day and girls and alcohol and all this. But, like, Robert was in math books yeah the entire time, just working out different variations of pi mm-hmm and coming up with new ways to prove pi. Like, he's super geeky about that stuff. But, like, because of his self-studies, like, he essentially trained himself in the car mm-hmm on tour. He hooked up with the UK mathematics program here and got his degree at UK. And then he hooked up with one of the world's leading number theorists now who he directly studies under. And like, he's in the top echelon of mathematicians in the world now, mm-hmm, working on some pretty creative stuff. As soon as he starts telling me about the stuff, my eyes glaze over and I have yeah to kind of check out a little bit. Like,
I can hang with it for about 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Then usually about the 5 minute point, they get into something
yes
where I need a tutor
right
at this point to help me out with.
So the Apples have pretty much been on hiatus since his school. We've done a couple. He and I have a solo project we have called Space Flight, and where he and I go and play music. We went on tour last year with the Neutral Milk Hotel.
Heard of them.
And
very good.
So we opened for them, just the two of us, which was a really, really fun tour.
Cool.
And we have stuff in the works with that project. The Apples is harder to get together because two guys live in Denver, one guy in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. Like, we're kind of spread out. And so, mm-hmm, I mean, we all keep up. We all talk to each other. But it's just hard to get that unit back together.
For sure. Well, that's awesome.
Thanks.
Well, John, mm-hmm, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Man, this was such a
this flew
great
by
conversation. It really flew by. One of the best hours ever.
Yeah. do we have time to play something off
absolutely
the compilation?
Absolutely.
Indeed we do. Can you tell us?
Awesome.
Yeah, which track do you want to play?
One more time, can you plug your label?
Yeah. So
let us know where they can check that out.
Perfect. Desperate Spirits, the record label that we started, has an online compilation. You can find it via Facebook or Bandcamp. The compilation is actually released on Bandcamp. So if you just type in Desperate Spirits. Or
is it Desperate?
Desperate.
Desperate
yes
Spirits. Gotcha.
Desperation.
Yes, yes.
And one more time, what's the name of this compilation? Because I love it.
It's called White Power is for Dummies. Mm-hmm. We toyed with the idea of calling it White Power is for Dum-Dums or Dummies. But we went back and forth. Just some way to shame people mm-hmm for being stupid.
Yeah, so butt-headed.
Like, yeah, espousing their stupid ideologies. Mm-hmm.
For all you bigots out there listening right to Bluegrass Bios,
yeah,
reconsider.
Yeah, yeah, we don't need you.
No.
Yeah.
As long as you're a bigot.
Or, I mean, check out change the compilation.
That's right. So this compilation, the track we're going to play, I think, is track 13, and it's Frigid Kitty, who's a wonderful local band. This is a track they donated to the compilation called Little One, so I wanted to make sure we played some of that.
That's great. Cool. Well, John, thanks again so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks
it's
for having me,
been
guys
a great time.
Appreciate y'all.
And up next, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios. This is Frigid Kitty on WLXU.